only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride will keep you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to. Get to me, what are you trying to prove? Come on, tell me you're leaving. Do you really think that the world gives a damn about you? Hell no, we don't. Get to people, who you're gonna turn to? Where you gonna turn to? Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself here. Talking to my people, but you just don't see what you're living at. Living like you're living, caught up in the make-believe, lost in your dream of you. Get the beat, stop giving up your self-respect, stop it, I'm to my people. Yeah, life can take some strange turns on you, living with a bank thrown at you. Won't you in the cold with a day that's not worth having? Chances on the shore falls agree. Never come to feel what you need, what you really want inside. Can only come from you. Get to me, yeah. What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we poured this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We sashay. We poured this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we poured this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We sashay. We poured this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, I hope everything is well with you today. I hope you have a great day planned. I hope you have a fantastic weekend planned. I hope you get the chance to do all the things that you want to do, need to do, have to do, should do, better do, must do. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, that's right, brothers and sisters, you got to get it done. So you do it anyway. You do it anyway. You don't procrastinate. You don't put it off. You get it done. And if you need help doing it, you get help. If you don't, you just do it. That's how it goes, brothers and sisters. Make it happen. It's a beautiful day. Hope you have a beautiful weekend planned. Remember that this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you can't listen live, then you can go to the archives. And yes, you can do that now. Brother Kwai Cook hooked it up. Much love and props to Brother Kwai Cook. You can go listen to previous recorded programs on timeforanawakening.com or blacktalkradionetwork.com. They're there, they're titled, so you know what you're going to be listening to. And so it's fantastic. So make sure you go to timeforanawakening.com or Black Talk Radio Network to listen to previously recorded programs. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, broadcasted out of Philadelphia. And then from 8 to 9 p.m., right after Acres of Diamonds, is Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365 is a podcast. You can also see them on YouTube, I believe it is, on the internet. Wednesdays is Revive with Sister POC. Revive, Proof of Consciousness, Sister POC, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Wednesdays. Thursday, yesterday, last night, Sister Nanana did an outstanding job of hosting the program. Myself, Brother Baba Kimbizi, and myself and others were on and had a good program. And we doing over our 10-point program for Us Lifting Us. And, of course, we have our Ulu, Cafe Ulu is open here in Atlanta, Mondays through Fridays from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's 2036 Sylvan Road here in Atlanta, Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road. If you want to know more about the cafe, go online to cafeulu.com, C-A-F-E-U-L-U. .com. If you want to know more about Us Lifting Us, go to usliftingus.com. And also, too, you'll know more about our Power Summit, the fifth annual Power Summit, taking place in a few weeks, 2 weeks, March 16th and 17th. On the 16th, we will have a meet and greet at the cafe. At the cafe, a meet and greet. On the 17th, we will have the Power Summit, and it will be at Atlanta Technical College from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., Atlanta Technical College. So check out Us Lifting Us. Check out the Cafe Ulu. It's going to be on the one. If it's Friday, and it is, and it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, that's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening. Time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. 8 p.m. until time for an awakening. Tomorrow, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Saturday Sports Talk. There will be no broadcast of Dr. William Rogers' program. Tomorrow, his daughter is getting married. Congratulations to his daughter and family and so forth. But Dr. Rogers will, and I mean this, will be broadcasting next Saturday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. right here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it is not Brother Oshi, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It is Sister POC, Revive. Revive on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Check her out. And then Sunday evening, it's time for an awakening. 7 p.m. until it's time for an awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Also, too, some other programs upcoming. One that I'm looking forward to is the 21st Century Black Survival Conference, April 14th at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Dealing with spirituality, culture, and survival. Spirituality, culture, and survival. It is presented by Straight Black Pride, and the Straight Black Pride Radio Network. Spirituality, the discussion will be led by Oshua Kwesi, the master teacher. And, of course, if you go online, go to YouTube and put in Oshua Kwesi's information, outstanding tools and information that he has provided over the many years. Culture, Baba Mwalimu Burudi, my good brother and friend Baba Burudi, will talk about a warrior's character. The survival aspect will be handled by the irritated genie from Straight Black Pride, African Survival in the 21st Century. Doors open up at 12 at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard in Atlanta. And check them out. I can't wait. I'll be there. Hopefully you will too. Also, too, the Republic of New Africa is having a conference March 29th to April 1st in Detroit. Republic of New Africa. And that organization, yes, brothers and sisters, is still in existence. The Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa. Thursday, March 29th to April 1st in Detroit. Charles E. Wright Museum will be one place, and Timbuktu Academy in El Kibalan Village will be one, some of the sponsors. So I'll continue to announce that and get Brother Jamoke in here online with us so Brother Jamoke can give the most pertinent and direct information on the Republic of New Africa. The other day, Wednesday, I failed to mention the day before, was the second anniversary of the transition of our good friend and dear friend, my dear friend, Queen Ifama. Queen Ifama is the one that really helped me develop this radio program. She was truly instrumental, truly will be missed. She passed February 27th. 2016. And so it's been 2 years and she was truly missed. Good sister, Queen Ifama, the truth terrorist, as she used to call it in her program, the truth terrorist. And even though we don't cuss, but hey, that wasn't Ifama's show. That was not Sister Ifama's show. The queen be like, you know, saying it loud and strong. And that's how the queen was. Talked to our good friend, Brother LaRue Ned. And hopefully one day we'll... What I'd like to do is get with LaRue and we'll talk about Queen and play the Psych Wars. That's a book that Brother LaRue did before he did Why We Should Not Call Our Ancestors Slaves, which I wholeheartedly agree with. Which I was saying that before he even wrote the book. We shouldn't call our ancestors slaves. And but he had a book out, Psych Wars. And Sister Queen Ifama did a piece over the internet, over YouTube, but you can hear that. Ifama, I-F-A-M-A, Ifama, Queen Ifama, the truth terrorist. If you want to look her up on YouTube, a lot of stuff on her on YouTube, because she was a very talented sister, extremely talented. A lot of stuff that she did. But I have a lot of respect and admiration for her for doing it. February is now gone. Another close of African and American African history, as I like to call it. You know, but to me, our history is too important to just be for a month. But the month needs to be dealt with, and we need to be serious about it. It is the opportunity in the midst of all this madness and chaos and hate and degradation and all of that to highlight men and women who are instrumental in our history, and not just here in America, but globally, and not just since our captivity, but from the beginning. We need to understand that, and we need to be able to tell that story, tell our story. In fact, that's what our program is today, our story. There's some critical facts about Africa that we should know. Africa is the cradle of early man. All early humanoids come out of Africa. Homo sapien, us, upright, walking on our legs, moving our arms, staying straight up, comes out of Africa. Homo sapiens sapien. Africa was the cradle of modern man, Homo sapiens sapien. In fact, it is said that in a DNA test, the Africans, us, are pure humanoid. Europeans and some others have Neanderthal DNA. This is my hypothesis on this. When Africans came into Europe and being cut off by an ice age, we had to change. Human beings adapt to environments. If they cannot adapt, they die. The environment in the north became very, very cold. Food was very scarce. The body style from out of Africa was tall and slender with dark skin to help you deal with the ultraviolet rays of the sun so you wouldn't get skin cancer. Your hair was close curled to let off the heat. Your nose was broad. Your lips were full. But when you ventured out of Africa and into a different environment, particularly in Europe, in the north, you changed, your body mutated, and you became Neanderthal. Stocky body, a lot of hair all over you, particularly down your back. Because what do you need? You need the blood from your heart to pump to where? Your brain. So you can think. If it was so cold and your neck was so cold, then the blood flow would not be as adequate as it would or should be to your brain to help you function. So you had hair all over, stocky body, hair all over. Your nose became thin to warm the cold air before it got into your lungs. Your lips became thin like a monkey's lips to hold in whatever amount of heat that you have. So you changed, you mutated to survive. Because everything on this planet that lives wants to continue to live. Otherwise, it will change. It will mutate to do that. Because if it doesn't adapt, it dies. From a tiny microscopic organism to tall redwood trees. If it is a living entity, it wants to continue to live. That's why you see some animal species, some plant, and so forth, that survive in harsh weather, extreme hot, as well as extreme cold. Africa is the cradle of civilization. This, what I'm reading to you are critical facts about Africa that no one can dare not refute. Drusilla Dungy Houston, when Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week in 1926, to honor Frederick Douglass, I don't say Abraham Lincoln because Abraham Lincoln was forced into glory and Abraham Lincoln didn't give a damn about Africans. Let's be real. He said it himself. If I could solidify the Union without freeing Africans, I would do so. We got to understand that history, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. We need to look at the history in its totality from the very beginning to present day and look at it objectively and look at it where it has been disrupted. Look at it as where it's been disjointed. Look who has done it and why they have done it. See, they don't want to give the credit to Africa for its many innovations, its many. See, that's why that quote, when Carter G. Woodson started Negro Week to honor us using Frederick Douglass's birthday, because he didn't know when his birthday was. Frederick Douglass did not know when his birthday was, he said. But his mother told him, "You are my heart. You are my Valentine." So he chose February 14th to be his birthday. And to honor him, Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week, which later evolved into Black History Month or as I like to say, African and African, you know, an American African History Month, because it is a chance for us to focus. Yes, our history should be with us 24/7, 365. We should celebrate it, talk about it, and I do. I always have, and I always will. Y'all will always bring up information about historical individuals, historical events in our history. It's important. It's important to never forget. But this is a time to focus, and so that's what he did. That's because even though he was a learned man who had a thirst for knowledge, took him all the way to Harvard University. He was the second American African to get a doctorate degree from Harvard University. And I'm saying it like Harvard's all that, because I don't give a damn about Harvard. Hell, he could have got it at Howard, which of course where he taught at for many years at Howard University in D.C. But he challenged himself. But what he did not see was the history and accomplishments of our people. And that's why he did what he did. That's why he sacrificed his life. He never had children. He never married. He dedicated to reclaiming, recapturing, and restoring our history. But also in 1926, Drusilla Dungy Houston wrote a book called The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. She has a quote that I think is the most profound quote. She says, "I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts and history that Harvard or Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our race dare not refute." She further states, "How can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? How can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past?" That's why we don't progress as a group of people globally and even where we are, because our leadership don't know this history and don't embrace it. Jesse, Al, NAACP, Urban League, none of them. They're in a constant beg mode to Caucasians. The history that we should understand is the glorious history of what we have done independent of anybody. We don't need, even at this very moment, brothers and sisters, we don't need to do anything but make up our minds to do it. And we don't have to ask anybody for permission. That's why in South Africa, I love what's happening. Told those Caucasians, we're taking our land back without any concern or any restitution. We're taking it back. You ain't getting nothing. We ain't giving you nothing because you took it. There was no negotiation. There was no compromise when you took it. And so then now, there's a big petition going around about many signatures since that happened just a few days ago, asking for those Caucasians in Southern Africa that they can, they're saying that the United States government will allow these Caucasians from Southern Africa whose land has been taken and they're not getting any compensation for them, yay, not a damn dime, yay, they're going to allow these Caucasians to come to the United States or countries in Europe where they're from. Most of the Southern Africans are Dutch, the Netherlands, Holland, Dutch, the Dutch Reformed Church, Dutch, and they call them the Boers, German, British. Those are pretty much the three entities in Southern Africa and in Namibia, where the Germans were. Go home, because we need to go home. Everybody, take your asses home. Okay. So, a petition, and so you'll probably hear more about that as days come, and of course, I'll be discussing that as well. Africa once held a position as world teacher, including the teacher of the Western world. This is very problematic because of the whole idea of European concept of their supremacy. and the inferiority of Africans. That's why, even though, and I'm going to play a little bit of Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop in a little while. I'm going to play about Brother Akili. I apologize. But Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, I'm going to talk about him. He is the one who led the symposium in Cairo in 74, talking about the peopling of Africa. I mentioned Dr. Diop many times because what he highlights is the fact that the ancient Kemetic society was African dark skin. But even though he won the debate proving that the ancient Kemetic people were African, still to this day, right now, when you watch National Geographic, the Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, PBS, whatever, movies, as well as documentaries, if they're talking about ancient Kemet and they show the people there, particularly people in authority, they look Caucasian. But if you show somebody serving somebody, exactly. So you understand what I'm saying. But we once held that position. People came from far and wide to sit at our feet. The Greeks, the Romans, the Hyksos, everybody came to sit at the feet of African people to learn the disciplines of knowledge, to how to run a society. That was us. Western society, the base. I had a Ma'at sweatshirt. I have a t-shirt as well with Ma'at on it, with their seven virtues of harmony, order, reciprocity, balance, you know, on the shirt. So a brother asked me about it. In fact, yesterday, two people asked me about it. And so I explained to them who Ma'at was, you know, and there was one brother, he didn't want to hear it because it goes against his Christian belief. It's about Jesus. Oh, it ain't about Jesus. I don't want to hear it. And as I tried to explain to him that this whole concept that you believe is based upon what this information was. Christianity is, you know, that's the thing. Here, something I'm explaining that was 2,000 years before Christianity. 2,000. So that's what makes this situation so beautiful, is that the Kemetic society that I'm talking about was 5,000 years ago. You got 2 to 3,000 years prior to the supposed birth of Jesus. And then what year is this supposed to be? 2018 years after the supposed birthday of Jesus. That's 5,000 years. And so the foundation of Greece, the foundation of Rome, the foundation of the Western society is based on what we as African people had developed and what we gave the world. There was a, and still is, a continent why cultural unity that overrides superficial appearances of cultural diversity in Africa. At the very core is all Africa from north, south, east, and west. Now, of course, the north is different because of the advent of Islam sweeping throughout the north of Egypt, Libya, Algeria, Mauritania, Morocco. And so I don't like what is happening. I don't like what is happening because they're still they're selling our brothers and sisters into enslavement in Libya. They've been doing it in Algeria and Morocco. No, especially Mauritania. They've been selling us for, you know, still. These and the northern countries are so-called Arabic, a lot of Muslim, so forth, which is, you know, a damn shame. So, yeah. But in the other parts of Africa, the southern part of Africa, the middle, the central part of Africa, eastern and western part of Africa, you know, we're getting together. But it is not. Let me just say this, brothers and sisters. I know it does not look good. And I know sometimes when I speak, it doesn't sound good. But I'm optimistic. We were the first people on the planet. I'd be damned if they're going to take us out like this. We were the first. And those who say the first shall be last and the last shall be first. Okay.
So there was a still a continent-wide cultural continuity and a unity that overrides superficial appearances of cultural diversity in Africa. Multiple languages. In fact, I'm going to play this piece, What If African Continent Was One Country. I'm going to play that real soon. Maybe not today. Maybe Monday or so. The first African movement throughout the world came as a result of a series of migrations that took place over thousands of years. Africans left out of Africa and populated the planet. And what makes us different as human beings is our ability to adapt to environment. A good example, if I say to you, as you ventured out and you came across mountain ranges, and as you climbed these mountains and camped and so forth and climbed more and started to descend or whatever it was, obviously in precipitation, when the clouds form and there is precipitation, the higher elevations is going to be snow. It may be in lower elevations, it might be sleet or rain. But higher elevations, that's why there is snow on Mount Kilimanjaro. And so just to say that you know it's going to be snow when you go up into Asia, in Europe, in higher elevations, you know it. There's seasons. And so now you ventured out and it snowed. You took shelter. The next day, in the blankets of snow, the sun is shining. What's going to happen to your eyesight? Exactly. You're going to squint because of the glare off the snow from the sun causes you to, you know, because it can be blinding. You're going to squint. And that's why Asians in the eastern part from the so-called Caucasus Mountains of East have slanted eyes. It's a survival mechanism. It's just like Australians, the Aborigines. They look like us, don't they? They have dark skin, don't they? Broad nose, but they have stocky bodies. And they have long, stringy hair. Sometimes even have blonde hair. Why? Environment. Human beings must adapt to the environment which they find themselves in. In that environment, during the day, it's hot and arid, but at night, it is chilly. It's cold. So they have the stocky body to hold in the heat, the long, stringy hair to insulate them. The broad nose and thick lips, but that's during the day. The hair, the stocky body, night. So human beings have the ability to adapt to the environment. And so these migrations took place over thousands of years. Africa has been under siege for nearly 2,000 years, and most recently from European captivity and colonization. Asiatics, Greeks, Romans, and Asiatics under Islam, and lastly Europeans have taken turns invading and sometimes colonizing the African continent. We have been under siege for a long time, as Dr. Chancellor Williams' book, Destruction of Black Civilization, notes, and many of our other scholars and historians have noted, that we have been under attack. And look at Africa today. Look at Africans in the diaspora. Look at Africans in America. That's what I'm saying. Dr. Clark was correct. We have no friends. You want a friend? Go look in the mirror. And don't leave that mirror till you like or really love who you see. Not that you like the shape of your nose or that your eyebrows are arched. No, that you like who you see historically. Like who you see culturally. Love your dark skin, your close curled hair. Or you love your hair, even if it's curly or wavy, or your skin is not as dark, but you know that you are African. Love who you see. And when you see somebody that looks like you, you love them too, because that is you. All of these invasions were really detrimental to African people, all of them. When the Greeks came in, when the Hyksos came in, that ruled for about 100 some years before they got together and kicked them out to the Persians. When the Persians came in fact, they were so brutal, they really welcomed the Greeks, from my understanding, from the history. of course, the Greeks, then the Romans, and then, of course, the spread of Islam. There is an African diaspora, Africans that do not live on a continent, all over the world today. A lot of them don't want to claim Africa. They, wherever that boat let them off at, they say that that's who they are. I'm Jamaican. I know Africa. I'm Jamaican. I'm a Puerto Rican. I'm a Dominican. I'm a Haitian. I'm not African. I'm an American. I'm not African. I'm an American. I'm a Brazilian. Yeah. African people have resisted domination stubbornly on the continent and in the diaspora. And that's one thing that we really need to understand. That's why we should never call ourselves slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We have never submitted. We have fought. We have resisted. We fought on the continent. We fought in the Middle Passage. And we fought in this hemisphere. Great battles, noted battles. In fact, get 1804 when the Haitian Revolution happened. Get 1804, once again, another outstanding documentary by Tariq Nasheed. I don't like him outside of that because all the other BS that he started. But the Hidden Colors series as well. I mean, not every word is true. Or the 1804, not every word is true. I believe that damn near all, most of it is. A great portion of it is. But if you have research that counters it, that's cool. And if it can be corroborated, that's cool. But the bottom line is that we need the history of us. And we need to know this history. We need to internalize it to give us the strength that we need to understand that beyond all of this madness, we as African people have continued to do great things. And we've continued to stubbornly resist what has happened to us, even to this day. Even under captivity, colonization, segregation, racism, and apartheid, African people have made monumental cultural contributions in the arts, sciences, humanities, politics, and every facet of human life. To me, that's what's extraordinary. The things that we have done and continue to do in spite of. I'm more in favor, dear brothers and sisters, believe me, in making sure that we get out of this madness, get us out of this whole situation. Because as long as we stay in it, you will never believe, you'll never understand the greatness of us as a people. Because we keep begging these crackers to act right, do right, be right, and it's not happened. It ain't happening now, and it ain't going to happen. But that is our prayer and hope, because we want what they have. We're addicted to white, oppressed, and in league with their oppressors. I'm going to get that book, Dr. Jerome Fox. I'm going to get that book. And if you got it, let me know in days to come so we'll talk about it. One of the people, before I go to Dr. Shekhan Jop, I want to play a piece by Brother Keeley. Brother Keeley is out of the UK. Really sharp. He's a very impressive young brother, Rastar, and he speaks on the issues, you know, just dynamically. And I hope that my good brother, Brother Paul from the UK, is listening. I know he knows this brother. But Brother Keeley, here's what Brother Keeley says about the ancient Kemetic people.
Okay, when we talk about who the ancient Egyptians were, there's consensus that Egypt has been invaded over half a dozen times. I haven't even included in this list the Ottoman invasion, I haven't included the French or the British invasion, that all came after this. But the Arab invasion in the 7th century of the Common Era, then the Vandals, which is where the word vandalism came from, because they was a bit mad, to use the technical term. That came in the 5th century. They're Germanic, German people. Then the whole of North Africa, not just Egypt, was a Roman province. Before that, Greek. Before that, Persian in 525 BC. At the most conservative estimate, ancient Egyptian history, pharaonic kingship, begins in 3100 BC. I say most conservative because I don't actually agree with that chronology, because my teacher, Robin Walker, big shout out to the OG, taught me that there's reasons to disagree with that chronology. But nonetheless, if we go with the most conservative estimate, can we see that the Persians still got to Egypt 2,500 years after the founding of ancient Egyptian kingship? So who was living in northeast Africa prior to all of these invasions from people that are not from Africa? Well, let's see. The ancient Greeks saw the ancient Egyptians for themselves. They were in Egypt during the Persian invasion, and of course, then when they ruled Egypt for a little while, let's see what some of them had to say. Next slide, please. Theodorus of Sicily, General Histories, Book 3, 30 BC. Now the Ethiopians, for those who don't know, Ethiopian literally means of the burnt face. It wasn't an insulting term, it was a generic term for black person, yeah, back in the day, and it referred to generally all of Africa, and even the Greeks used it to refer to parts of India. If you go to India today, in southern India, you'll find people, some people, as black as any people in Africa. So it shouldn't surprise you if that term was used, but it was a generic term meaning black. Now the Ethiopians, as historians relate, were the first of all men. The proofs of this statement, they say, are manifest. They also say the Egyptians are colonists sent out by the Ethiopians. Now can you see, we're told modern science discovered that Africans were the first people on the planet. But here is an ancient Greek historian saying that Africans were already saying we were the first people on the planet in 30 BC. Herodotus, the father of history. There can be no doubt but that the Colchians are an Egyptian race. Before I heard any mention of the fact from others, I had remarked it myself. My own conjectures were founded on the fact that they are black-skinned and have woolly hair. Afro. Yeah? The Colchians, by the way, are a group of people in southern Russia at the time. Whole host of other Greek scholars, including Aristotle, and there's loads more I could have put, seem very unconfused about the ancient Egyptians' ethnicity. We can't have it both ways. Either the ancient Greeks were one of the most intelligent, civilized people ever, or they were so stupid they couldn't recognize the colors of people they saw for their own eyes. But we can't have it both ways, you see? Next slide. Now, here are some Egyptologists. It's important for us to understand the way early Egyptology evolved. When the French came to Egypt and colonized Egypt, it was in the height of transatlantic slavery, late 1700s, Napoleonic expedition to Egypt. The Sphinx, the pyramids, all of these things are newly rediscovered. And immediately the French are like, uh-oh, we've got a bit of a problem here, because we have an economy based on the pseudo-scientific idea of racism, based on the idea that some races, namely the white race, an invention, is superior to other races, particularly the black. And the discovery of an ancient African civilization, thousands of years before there was anything of comparable stature in France or England, not an insult, just a fact of history, created some problems. Now, some scholars immediately reacted to this by saying, okay, well, clearly racism's nonsense. Hooray, we can do away with such a stupid idea. Of course, foreign policy realized this wasn't terribly convenient if your economy depends on racialized slavery. So even though some honest scholars came out and told the truth, many scholars went against this, and you're going to see how ridiculous some of the explanations got. Champollion, not the main Champollion, but the brother of Francois Champollion, had the following to say. I'm not going to read it all, but if you look closely, he says that Volney's basically chatting rubbish. There's no way the ancient Egyptians could have been black. But let's get to the end, and this is how funny it is. Listen to this part. Volney invokes that of Herodotus, who recalls that the Colchians had black skin and woolly hair. Yet these two physical qualities, black skin and afro hair, do not suffice to characterize the Negro race, and Volney's conclusion as to the Negro origin of the Egyptians is evidently forced and inadmissible. Now, he didn't offer any evidence. All he said was having black skin and woolly hair doesn't make you black. And if we go back into the racial science of the day, you will understand that it was actually argued by otherwise intelligent people that there were two races of black people. There were Negroes and there were Hamites. Hamites were any Africans that didn't look absolutely stereotypically what we think of West African people to supposedly look like. Anyone that has a slightly thin nose or any kind of straight hair or any features randomly that we decide was a Hamite. And Hamites were responsible for all of the civilization in Africa, and they descended from Europeans. Negroes, on the other hand, they were the real black people. And even when we find evidence of Negroes, we'll just say they were Hamites, as you have here. This is how silly and how ridiculous ideas, pseudo-scientific ideas like race, make otherwise intelligent people behave. Next slide, please. This is one particular comment, one of my favorite. He said, there are a people now forgotten, discovered, while others were yet barbarians, the elements of the arts and sciences, a race of men, not, of course, like most sexist men, he used men, but he meant all humans, because we just normalize that kind of language, men to represent all of humanity, now rejected from society for their sable skin and frizzled hair, founded on the study of the laws of nature, those civil and religious systems which still govern the universe. Again, two early Egyptologists saying very much the same thing. Egyptian civilization is not Asiatic, but African in origin, of Negro origin. However paradoxical this may seem, we are not accustomed, in fact, to endow the black or related races with too much intelligence. So Professor Abi Amalou straight away hit on what the issue was. Francois Champollion, the founding father of Egyptology, the man who decoded the Rosetta Stone, what did he have to say? Because apparently, according to National Geographic, the only people that think the ancient Egyptians were black were crazy Afrocentric black people. But let's see. The Egyptians belonged to a race quite similar to the Kenuas, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, or Barbarous, present inhabitants of Nubia, Sudan. In the present Copts of Egypt, we do not find any of the characteristic features of the ancient Egyptian population. The Copts are the result of crossbreeding. Seems normal when a country gets invaded, there's interbreeding. The people that live in America today are not representative of the ancient indigenous Americans for the most part. Even though those people still live there, the average citizen of New York does not look like the average American 500 years ago. With all the nations that successively dominated Egypt, i.e. the Greeks and Romans, it is wrong to seek in them the principal features of the old race. And I could go on ad infinitum of Egyptologist after Egyptologist, who even if they felt compelled to racially abuse the ancient Egyptians, which many of them did, some of the art historians talk about, how can you ever say their carvings are nice when they're so obviously Negro? Many of them, scores of them are like, well, obviously they were black, that's why they were uncivilized. So Egyptologists were presented with this real problem. Either ancient Egypt was civilized and European, or uncivilized and African. And very few of them acknowledged that it was both highly civilized, highly technically advanced, and also African, but a few of them did. Next. I'm not going to come here and pretend to you that it was a feminist paradise, but what we do know is there were 5 female pharaohs, women could inherit and bequeath property, and of course we had female physicians. Medical specialization, shipbuilding and expeditions, copious amounts of literature in poetry and prose has survived. There is 3 great volumes of ancient Egyptian literature published by a scholar called Mary Lichtenheim. I suggest you look them up, in addition to the coffin texts and the pyramid texts and others. Next.
That's Brother Akili from the UK. With a presentation that he did. It's a longer presentation explaining to a whole bunch of Caucasians in I don't know if it's Parliament or whatever, that the ancient Kemetic people were African people. The debate has been won. We owe a great debt of gratitude to Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. It's pronounced Jop, but it has been pronounced previously as Diop, but at our ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, conference last year in New Orleans, his documentary, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop's documentary was presented, and it's outstanding. Of course, it's all in subtitle because he did not speak English. He spoke French and Wolof and a number of other languages. That's why if you go to YouTube and you put in Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, D-I-O-P, Diop, Dr. Diop, you will hear him speaking in French and with a translator. But the information is on point because in 1974, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, along with Dr. Theophilia Obinga, came to that symposium and they kicked ass. He said, I can prove to you that the ancient Kemetic people were African 10 ways. Phenotype, skeleton remains. But to me, the smoking gun is the melanin dosage test that he created. Dr. Diop was an intellectual giant. He, and along with Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, William Edward Burghardt Du Bois, were 2 of the intellectual giants of the last century, period. Not just amongst Africans, but men, period. And Diop proved that the ancient Kemetic people, and Dr. Philio Bingo, who was a linguistic, proved that the language that is even spoken in Western African and in Southern African ties to ancient Kemet. So the debate was won, but the Caucasian suffers from cognitive dissonance. I don't give a damn how much proof you come with. I dismiss it. I ignore it. I deny it because it doesn't go along with my narrative of me being superior over all others. Cognitive dissonance. That's why I keep saying, dear brothers and sisters, there is nothing that we can do or say to change the minds and attitudes of Caucasians, particularly as it relates to us and who we are as a people. He was born December 29, 1923, at Durbal, Senegal. Best known advocate of ancient Kemet was a black civilization. The history of black Africa will remain, this is one of his quotes, the history of black Africa will remain suspended in air and cannot be written correctly until African historians dare to connect it with the history of Kemet. Egypt is a Greek word. Egypt is a Greek word. They call themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. Some say it means the black land. And where they get that from is that in the inundation, when the river inundates, when the river floods, that's when they did pyramid building, temple building, construction building, whatever. But when the river recedes, it deposits it black, fertile earth along its banks. And that's when they got together to do the agricultural piece. Because why? They lived on a desert. And the most important thing that you need living on a desert is food and water. And so that's why they didn't play around. That's why they charted the stars. They knew when the river was going to inundate. They knew when the river was going to recede. They knew what they had to do to make sure that the people were fed, and that the pharaohs and the ancestors and so forth were glorified. With the publication of the African Origins of Civilization, Jop changed the attitudes about the place of African people in history and around the world. Jop and Du Bois were honored at the first African Festival of Arts and Culture in 1966 as the writers who had exerted the greatest influence on African people in the 21st century. There I mentioned the fact that both of them received an award from the World African Festival of Arts and Culture in 66. Director of Radiocarbon Nation Laboratory at the University of Dakar until his death in 1986 when Dr. Jop died. Director of the Radiocarbon Vital background. He was a chematologist, a physician, a philosopher, and a historian. A multidisciplinarian. Published several books, including The African Origins of Civilization, Pre-Colonial Black Africa, and Black Africa, the Economic and Cultural Bias for Federated States. It is that book that I read when I knew that Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop understood the importance of a United States of Africa. He understood that. Kwame Nkrumah understood that. Patrice Lumumba understood that. And, of course, they all died. They all died before their time. A United States of Africa, the economic and cultural basis for a Federated States of Africa, provided undeniable evidence to the world scholars and UNESCO at the conference in 1974 that the ancient Kemetic people were African. In fact, the UNESCO wrote two different theories on that. Dr. Jop came up with the two cradle theory of human development. Jop stated that two cradles explains that during the migrations out of Africa in the early history of humans, human, two cradles of humanity were formed, African and Eurasian. These two cradles caused the people in them to develop different habits and instincts and concepts. When these two cradles met after a long separation, these differences caused the two cradles to clash, and we are still clashing today. Here's the difference between the two cradles. African, agricultural economy, farming and so forth, Eurasian, hunting. African, sedentary, stationary, to build where you are. The Eurasian, nomadic, rover, because he's constantly in search of food. He lives in an environment that is extremely harsh. Matriarchal, family, female head of household, Eurasian. Patriarchal, family, male head of household, hardcore dominating, men dominate, women submissive. In the piece you just heard by Brother Akila, didn't he state that in ancient Kemetic society, women and men had a mutual equivalent, and that there were even women who were pharaohs? Queen Hatshepsut ruled for 21 years. Women could divorce. Women could have property. No, women were not disrespected. In fact, that's one thing I think that the Greeks seen how we were treating our women, which, of course, men in Greece did not treat their women that way. Europeans don't treat your women that way, period. But that's what we did, because we understood that there's a symbiotic relationship between men and women. Without women, there are no men. Without men, there are no women. We belong together. We must work together. Women must support men, and men must support women together. In Africa, it's countrywide government systems. In Eurasia, it's city-state government units, more centrally compact. But in Africa, we ruled in a way that everybody in a dominant area understood what should take place, what, how we should interact with one another, even though it might be 100 miles away or more. We still knew what we should do as it relates to one another and the support we need to have. But in Europe, isolated. That's why you have all those various countries in Europe have been battling and warring amongst each other until, of course, they had their so-called renaissance, their so-called awakening. Africa, xenophilia, no fear of strangers, animals, etc. We embrace, we welcome people, xenophilia. Europeans, xenophobic, fear of strangers, animals, and so forth. We gotta dominate. We gotta, you know, they look strange to me. They're this different. I gotta control them. I gotta kill them. African collectivism, family, and community are important. Europeans, Eurasians, individualism, selfishness, me and I are more important. It's about me and mine, to hell with you and yours. That's their mindset. Ideal of peace, justice, and harmony. We're African. The ideal of peace, justice, and harmony. That's the seven virtues of Ma'at, which rule the society. Ma'at rule the society. And if you lived in accordance of the laws of Osir, you would go live in the afterlife on the side of Osir, who the Greeks called Osiris. So the idea of peace, justice, and harmony in your life as you're living is important, because that will determine if you go on to the afterlife. But the Eurasians, the idea of war, violence, and crime, and conquest. I, me, top of the mountain, the conqueror. I must control and subdue. Optimistic religious systems, hopeful. Optimistic religion system, understanding about how the universe works, and the importance of and the importance of you in it. But Caucasians, pessimistic religious systems, hopelessness. We need a savior. It's bad, and ain't nothing you can do on earth. So you just got to continue to wait on the savior. If you believe in the savior, then that's all you got to do. You can be as dogmatic, mean spirit, and evil as hell. But you believe in the Savior. Because this world is going to end. And the Savior, and you believe, then you'll be in heaven. That's like I said, I told the brother. I understand, brother. Because it's like this. I rather believe and it not be true than to not believe and it be true. Because if I don't believe and it is true, I'm burning in hell. All right. But so I rather believe in all those stories and all that mysticism, all that fairy tale and all that bull, and have my mind warped. And that's what it is, brother. We're battling for the minds of our people. The two cradle theory of Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about Dr. A.C. Hilliard and his contribution to the history of African people. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You can call us to join this conversation at 215-490-9230. What's my number, man? You can call us at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives. We'll be right back. Hey, take me back. Somebody take me back. Hey. I want to go back to my ancient ways. Hey.
Self is priceless. So yo, bro, tell me how you living. Unlock the secrets behind racism, schisms, and all the mechanisms. Can't break what's in my system. Never. Loaded to go hit the grand slam, lock and throw it, how to destroy. Here comes another soldier boy. If they call him martial law, no president ain't walking out the door. He's obsessed with control and power. Secrets are riches inside your dollar. Regenerate hate, candidate debate. My patrol on the border so he can push weight. Better watch them government officials. Say, they're strapped with a pistol. Create another issue. Or if they gonna drop a missile. Who's strapped? If you don't drag. If the earth is your country, the wave your flag. Sneak up, all designed to kill your own people. Sex offenders to do the people. Yeah. Civil rights, we still ain't equal. Yeah. The church, look who's hanging from the steeple. We are you, we are. Mardi Gras can't stop the drummer beat with me. Genesis 6 can't stop us marching in the streets. We got fun putting your balls up, putting your knee. Baby, we ain't coming nowhere. Love, too clever, so you better get your act together. If you're on the weather, it's wrong by the all my queen, mother nature. Set the tide. The way you communicate. Come on.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com or blacktalkradionetwork.com. If you cannot listen live to these programs, you can always go to the archives of previous recorded programs, which my good friend and brother, Brother Kwaku, has finally set up with us on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You can check out the archives of previously recorded programs. We also, too, brothers and sisters, we say we're here every Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Here in African Perspectives. On Monday, Acres of Diamonds is from 6 p.m. to 8. And then after Acres of Diamonds, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 p.m. until. On Wednesday, Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family-Centered Economics. That is on Thursdays, 9 p.m. until. On Friday, today, 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Ellie and Brother Richard. Tomorrow, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then next week, will be Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And if you have any questions or comments that you would like to give us or give us your African perspective, you can call us at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Dr. Asa Hilliard, right here in Atlanta, Georgia, a brilliant man, Nana Bofo. I can't pronounce the second part of his name, but outstanding brother, founder of ASCAC. He went to the 1986, helped organize the 1986 pilgrimage of mostly American Africans returning to the great land of Africa, the Nile Valley. I mean, I wish I could have been in that group. I do know people who were there and who attended, and it was just inspirational and awe-inspiring. I have been to Kemet. I've been blessed. I've been fortunate. I've been to Kemet. In fact, if you ever heard me, I've mentioned this a few times. When I went to Kemet, there was a cloud over Europe, which prevented them from traveling. So when I went to Kemet in April of that year, I think it was 2008, when I went that year, it was real easy to get around. You could get into a lot of the temples and tombs without standing in line. Because, I mean, you know, reality is the world goes to Kemet. The world goes to Kemet, and I had a good conversation with the tour person I had when we went south to Aswan, to Abu Simbel, where Ramesses the Great, has his temple, and it's just a marvel. And me and that gentleman had some good conversation, and he said to me, "You are right. This is not us." He's an Arab. He said, "This is not us. We benefit tremendously from it, you know, but it is not us. It is the Africans." In fact, probably the most important relief on the wall, which is a painting on the wall, is found in Ramesses III's temple of four individuals, two that look exactly alike, which is stated as Kemetic and Nubian. Because they're cousins. To the north is Kemet, to the south is Nubia, which is now the northern Sudan. Cousins, the same people. The other two were Persians or Arabs or the Asiatics. Once again, that's how they saw themselves. They knew they were African. They knew they were black. They didn't see themselves as Caucasians. They saw themselves as Africans. Dr. Asa Grant Hilliard III was born August 22nd in 1933 in Galveston, Texas. A teacher, psychologist, and historian, he began his career in Denver Public Schools. Hilliard earned a BA in educational philosophy, in counseling and education, in educational pathology and psychology from the University of Denver, where he taught in this College of Education and Philosophy colloquium of the Centennial Scholars Honors Program. He also served on the faculty of San Francisco State University for 18 years. During that time, he was a department chair for 2 years, dean of education for 8 years, and was a consultant to the Peace Corps, as well as a superintendent of schools. He was a superintendent of schools in Monrovia in Liberia for 2 years. Nana Bofor. Dr. Hilliard's career was dedicated to exploring ways to better educate African children, to teach the truth about the history of Africa and the African diaspora. He developed African-centered curriculums and frequently led study groups to Kemet and Ghana. A founding member of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, ASCAC, Dr. Hilliard served as its first vice president. Later, Dr. Hilliard received an African name, Nana Bofo. I can't pronounce the other part, which means generous one. His name means generous one, Nana Bofo. As a writer, Nana Bofor wrote numerous technical pages, articles, and books on testing, ancient African history, teaching strategies, public policy, cultural styles, as well as child growth and development. He also consulted with many other leading school districts, universities and government agencies, and private corporations on valid assessments, valid curriculum, equity, and teacher training. Several of his programs, imperialistic curriculum, assessments, and valid teaching has become national models. A recipient of numerous awards and honors, his impact on African-centered education will be felt for many years to come. Nana Bofor. Here is a piece on Dr. Hillier talking about the science of racism. He's talking with Brother Lester Velt Melton. Brother Lester Velt Melton was a brother who created a lot of interviews with some of our leading scholars of that time. This is in the 80s when Dr. Ben, Dr. Chancellor Williams, Dr. Clark were all around, Dr. Von Sertema. He's had conversations with them all. So once you go to YouTube, you can put his name in. But if you put the person he's interviewing's name, they'll come up too, because he did a great job of interviewing our scholars and historians. Brother Lester Velt Melton. Here is Dr. Asahir Nana Bofor.
The consciousness of that behavior to disappear. And so over a period of time, you know, figure the centuries that African populations have been in America, it's possible that the population merely American, each of these is a step or an indication that there is some loss of conscious contact with one's true identity.
You have talked about the neuroses, I guess that's the word maybe, among the European population during this enslaving period. Would you address that, please?
Right, well, if you operate a system of domination, a formal system of domination, by those rules that I talk about, you have to confront the truth. And the only way that you can be consistent in applying those rules is ultimately to bend the truth. And after a while, it results in an adaptive process that we call racism, which is really a mental disorder. It's a disorder in the mental sense because it follows the rules of mental disorder. For example, manifestations of racist behavior as a result of domination are the denial of reality, perceptual distortion, delusions of grandeur, phobias in the face of differences, and projecting blame, you know, blaming the victim.
Explain those, please.
Well, each of these are ways that I guess you call them adjustment or adaptive mechanisms. For example, if you take Africa as it really existed, and you attempt to subjugate Africa as Europeans did, it couldn't work if you're subjugating another human being. So that human being had to be changed mentally into something else, had to be changed into a subhuman or an animal or anything else. But you could not operate and be consistent with yourself. So it required a change in one's mind, which meant that the Europeans had to begin to lie to themselves about what Africa was and had been. And in the process of keeping that misinformation going, then one adapts to unreality. So when you see reality, it's necessary to deny reality. So denial of reality would be an example of that, would be to look at the population of Egypt, which was a black population, and to say it was a white population. That's a flat-out denial of what the facts say, and that, of course, has been typical throughout history. Perceptual distortion is just simply not getting a clear view of what is really true, even while looking at the truth. Teaching of white supremacy means the belief in the supremacy of white people, or it could be anyone who would follow the rules of oppression. If one decided that their own group was superior to all other groups, that would be an example of what I call a Napoleonic complex, because it is not true that that the white group is superior to anyone else, but the belief in that would be a psychological distortion of reality, and in that sense would be following the rules for oppression.
As we get ready to go to the first slide, mm-hmm. you said that racism is a mental disorder.
Yes.
I was interviewing a gentleman the other day, and I brought that up in a conversation, mm-hmm. and he said, well, racism is not a mental disorder. He said, racism is very ordered. He mm-hmm. said that whites, Europeans, know exactly what they're doing, that racism is a political and economic convenience. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it depends on who you're talking about. If you talk about the, see, I think of systems as having designers, as having advocates, as having players, and as having pawns. This is from game theory, and I borrowed that from Bob Williams, who analyzes systems in that way. Everybody is not a game maker or a game designer. So the game designer might be conscious of creating a racist system, whereas the advocate probably becomes unconscious. They buy into the system that was created by the designer. And so the advocate is a racist in the sense that I'm talking about it, or the dealer, you know, those people who carry out the rules of the master in the system without really knowing why the master created the system or even that a system was created. They just simply inherit a belief system and an action system, and in that sense they are players in the game, but they are not the game maker. So
okay.
I make a distinction.
Now break that down for the person on the street one time.
Right.
Go over that again.
There are some people who are puppets.
All right.
And there are others who are puppeteers.
Thank you. Free your mind.
I'll try to do a better job.
Free your mind. Return to the source. African origins. Why that title?
Okay, well, obviously we've been talking about the fact that the adjustment to domination is kind of a mental adjustment as well as a physical adjustment. So for the person who is enslaved and for the person who enslaves, I've already suggested that there is a distortion between the real world and what they believe. There's a mismatch between those two things. So what we need to do in order to get back at the truth is to have mental freedom. So I like to title this a program about mental freedom. So it's free your mind. Return to the source suggests the way to get to mental freedom. That means going back to primary sources. Instead of talking about what someone heard, let's go to the evidence itself. Also in the case of African people, it means returning to African sources, because that's the only way that renewal can occur. And then, of course, African origins refers to the fact that Africa is the home of many things, and most of us don't know that. Things have been said about Africa that make us believe the opposite of that. We don't believe that Africa was a creative place, that it was a teacher. We believe that Africa was always a recipient, a student of other people. And so African origins, which is the source, one of the sources, by considering those African origins, it's a way to free the mind of oppressor and oppressed. I have a short section that I call The Defamation of African People. And the reason that I do this is that it's important to establish the fact that some of the things I said are true. And we won't have time to go into many of these, but I'll just show you an example of the perceptual distortion, the denial of reality, the attempt to erase history, the attempt to oppress culture. All right. In 1910, the Encyclopedia Britannica had an article in it about Negro. Mm-hmm. This would be one of many examples of how Africans and other people get information about themselves. And
welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You've just been listening to Baba Nana Bofora, Dr. Asa Hilliard III, Baba Asa, as many people have called him, was an outstanding educator, a great teacher. In fact, he passed in ancient Kemet. He passed in Kemet doing what he loved, teaching our brothers and sisters about the history. He passed in Kemet on a tour. And his wife, Betsy Jo, she still lives here. She was the mayor of East Point, Georgia. And she did something historic. She appointed a sister to be the chief of the East Point Fire Department, Rosemary Cloud. And that was history-making because it was the first time that a woman had been appointed to be a chief of a larger paid fire department in the country. Many followed after that, but she was the first. And Sister Betsy Jo Hilliard appointed her. Listening to that interview with Lester Velt Melton over the long version of the interview, I pulled a lot of information out of that because I was working with young people in the Milwaukee public school systems, and I wanted to make sure that they had a clear understanding of who we are and what we have done. Because when you've been led to believe you've never done anything, that you were running around the jungle with a rag up your ass and a bone through your nose, never having created a civilization of any kind. And if you keep getting beat down with that, you will believe it until proper information comes your way. That's like I'm saying, is that ignorance is only absence of knowledge. So if you are ignorant of the fact of your glorious past and your history, you're just ignorant of it. You don't know. But now, when I infuse you with knowledge of self, that should eliminate your ignorance of who you are. And that's what our great scholars were all about, particularly Dr. Asa Hilliard. He put a piece out there to the keys to the study of Kemet. There are keys to the study of Kemet. The facts about Kemetic culture. The culture of Kemet began in Nubia. It is a culture older than the dynasties. There were 30 dynasties in ancient Kemetic society because right made right, not might made right. Because in Europe, might made right, because if you ascended to the kingship, you might have stayed there no matter how terrible you were, no matter how disgusting you were. Look at the British royal family, which I detest. How long they've been in that position, the royals. And because this is a part of that British system, United States, that's why you always see it. That's why they're always putting stuff out there about the royal family, the queen this, the queen that. The hell with the queen, the king, and anybody else that are European. I'm just being real. Because they're liars and they're pledgers. They're thieves. Nobody worse than the British, believe me. Nobody. The biggest enslavers. The biggest thieves. Why you see Canada, this country, many parts of this hemisphere, has of course Australia, New Zealand. The British. It's older than the dynasties. It begins in Nubia, in the southern Sudan, and it moves down the Nile River. The Nile River, the longest river in the world, 4,000 miles, flows from south to north. The Mississippi flows from north to south. But the Nile flows from the interior of Africa and then flows north to the Mediterranean Sea. 30 dynasties were created. The first dynasty begins with Namur. He unites the two lands of upper means the southern part. I know it can be disorientated, but once you understand it, and once you understand them, you clearly see where they were coming from, because they were coming from the south. That's upper. Lower is in the north, as it empties into the Mediterranean. And he united these two lands, and he became the pharaoh, the first great pharaoh of the United Lands, Namur. He unites the two lands. And that begins the dynasty one. A dynasty is a period of time that a family rules. It could be a day or it could be hundreds of years. Probably the longest run of any monarch has to be Pepi II, who ruled starting as a little boy all the way to he was almost 100. Pepi II in the third dynasty. The third dynasty. Like I said, there were 30 dynasties. And in fact, the last great walk in the sun, as Dr. John Henry Clark says, was Dynasty 25 of Pianchi and Taharqa. Older is better, the writing, the medu netra. Medu netra means, medu means writing. Medu means writing. Netra means gods. The writing of the gods. Is better the first two golden ages. Architecture, such as pyramids and temple, is built better. In the first two golden ages, the first golden age is the age of the pyramid age. This is where Khufu commissioned the first great pyramid in Giza. Khufu, Khafre, and Menkaure, the great pyramid. There was more pyramids built in the Sudan, what is now the Sudan, than in Kemet. 70. Pyramid building is perfected as it moves north, as it moves downriver. It is perfected. But they were not the first of many of the pyramids. Because you must understand. Well, here says it best. The cultural orientation was southern. The Kemetic people came from the south. They came from Nubia, which is now the lower Sudan. The word for face and the word for south, the direction they bury their dead, are the same. They buried their dead with their faces turned towards the south, their origin. The main rulership of Kemet came from the south. And even when they rescued them in the 25th dynasty, they came, Taharqa and Pianchi, from the south. We always must remember in these keys to the study of Kemet that all invasions were destructive. When the Hyksos came in, the only thing that the Hyksos really brought in was horse and chariot. And it only lasted 100-something years until they were finally kicked out of Kemet. But all the invasions were destructive. It did not bring anything of great significance to the culture because it was so superior. Even when the Greeks came in, even when the Romans came in, it was only with the advent of Islam that the culture finally changed because it was so dynamic and superior. In fact, the Ptolemies, which is after the 30th dynasty, the Ptolemy rule is when Alexander the so-called great and the Greeks came into Kemet and began to rule, and then you begin to see a change. Because to those who are victors, those who win, they begin to change the dynamics. To the victors goes the spoils, as the saying goes. So they began to change the dynamics. They began to Aristotle began to put his name on a lot of stuff at the museum in the library and all the papyri. They're a bunch of thieves, pledgers. Take your name off, put their name on as the creators of this, that, or the other. They ain't the father of nothing. In fact, even though the father of medicine, Hippocrates, that's why even to this day, you take an oath when you become a doctor, which is called the Hippocratic Oath. But contained in the oath, the name Aesculapius is Imhotep of the third dynasty, the world's first multi-genius, Imhotep. He was an advisor to the Pharaoh Zoser in the third dynasty, the Pharaoh Zoser, and he built the Step Pyramid at Saqqara. And when I went to Saqqara, some of the colonnades, the pillars are still there. You can see, of course, the Step Pyramid. They were doing some work on it. You know, when you see these great monuments and these tremendous memorials and these You know, I mean, it's mind blowing. But imagine what they look like in ancient times. Because the three pyramids at Giza, when they were finally completed, it took 70 something years to complete. But when they were finally completed, when they put the capstone at the very beginning, they put a limestone covering over the pyramids. A limestone, smooth limestone covering. So when the sun came up and hit them, this is what some serious bling. This is serious bling. And if you heard about this and you ventured to that land looking for it and you came in contact with that, you'd be awestruck. Bam! You would be awestruck. Well, when Islam took over, everything was beginning to be buried by the encroaching desert. In fact, when Napoleon came in, Hori Makhet, or what the Greeks called the Sphinx, only thing that was visible was its head. His whole body was under sand until they excavated, until they dug it up, and then many, many other things began to be revealed. All the invasions. And the culture did not change until the 7th century, the 1600s. Islam, came on the scene at 635, 625, I believe. That's when it began to change. Science generated religion. The Kemetic religion and culture were developed through a study of nature. The culture became great because of four things I've always told the people I work with. The Kemetic culture became great because of four things: study, communications, cooperation, and organization. Study. They studied everything. They studied the stars. They studied land. They studied everything. They studied animals. They studied insects. In fact, many of the gods were personifications or pomorphized, like Jehudi. They looked at the ibis bird and its elegance and so forth. He became the god of articulation and speech and science, Jehudi. The Greeks called him Toth. It was Jehudi that put information into the book of life. It was Yehudi that was recording you when you went through the death scene, the judgment scene, when you put your heart on the scale and it was going to be weighed by the feather of Ma'at. It was Yehudi that was recording this information. As you said, I have not lied, I have not stolen, I have not 42 times. And if you maintain balance, if your heart maintain balance with the feather of Ma'at, then you go on to sit in judgment of Al-Sayr, and then you go on into the afterlife. But if your heart became heavier than the feather because there was a lie here or there, then you were devoured by the beast of unjust souls. I see we have a caller. Caller 267, go ahead, you're on. Good morning. Good afternoon. We have a caller? 267? I guess not. Okay. Science generated religion. Study. Everything. They studied everything. Number one, of course, they lived on a river, so they had to study the stars. They had to chart these things because they live on a river. They had to know when the river was going to inundate. Because when the river inundated, that's when they moved to go down river, which is, going up river, which is going south. They're going up river, fighting against the currents because the current flows from south to north. So they're going down to where the corridors are, where the mountains are, and they're cutting stone. And they're putting stone on the barges and sailing them downriver, which is going north. And placing that stone one on another. No cement, no mortar, nothing. Just heavy stone, tons of stone, placed one on top of another and cut cleanly, cut perfectly. study. They studied everything. Communications. They spoke to be understood. Okay, yes, I understand it was a homogeneous society. All spoke the same language, which is always great. That's why I always had a problem with that Tower of Babel fable in the Bible. Because to me, if we all speak in the same language, then we could communicate more better or more easily. But of course, in that story, Nimrod, who is the son of Canaan, who is the son of Ham, who is supposed to be black people, Nimrod builds a tower. He shoots the arrow up in the sky, and then God strikes down and it confounds their tongues. And while people can't communicate, now people are wandering around here and there, suspicions and all kinds of stuff, and all kinds of bad attitudes about this, that, or another, and start to war. Made God to me a mischief maker. Study, communications. Cooperation. They cooperated with one another. That's why they built so dynamically and it lasted for so long. And the information is there and it was so beautiful. There are some temples that are still being found. Brother Anthony Browder has been doing great work. There's others that have been doing great work. In fact, I just read an article that they found another temple down in the south. In fact, when temples were being robbed, they began to move them to the south. So instead of having pyramids that would be broken into, they had temples in the sides of mountains. Look at Hatshepsut's temple. It's just outstanding and magnificent. I visited it. Beautiful. In the valley of the kings and queens. Cooperation. They didn't diss one another. They didn't fight and beg and argue. No, they cooperated. Because what they were doing and what they did lasted for thousands of years. Study, communications, cooperation, and of course they had to be organized. Study, communication, cooperation, and organization. They were organized. Everybody knew what they were supposed to do, and they did it. No matter if it was from the person who was helping to pull that stone and or placing the log so the stone could be continued to be rolled up ramps and so forth, or doing whatever mechanism they had, to those who were writing, who were scribes, those who were advisors to the Pharaoh, for those who were warriors. Study, communication, cooperation, and organization. Nothing gets done without organizing, without organization. There was no dualism in ancient Kemet. It was either this or that, because the Kemetic culture was all-inclusive. There was no cliques, no outcasts, no church-state separation. It was all-inclusive. Remember, I just stated to you, science generated religion. Looking at the science, how they came up with Amun-Ra, Amun, the unseen, the hidden, Ra, rays of the sun. They understood the importance of the sun, because without the sun, we don't live. Without the sun, ain't nothing happening. They understood this. Everything was born out of study. And they looked at the animals. That's why they gave them names. And they put the heads of the animals on the bodies. Heteru, Osiris, excuse me, Osiris, Osir, and Heru. Tips to use when studying Kemet. Organize your data in chronological order to the best of your ability. Always use Kemetic names whenever possible. Use Waset, not Thebes, or Luxor. In fact, the word Luxor came as Arabic and it meant luxury, Luxor. But it was Waset. It wasn't Thebes or Luxor, it was Waset, the scepter. use Hori Makat, not Sphinx. Hori Makat, Heru of the horizon, is what that head of the man and the body of a lion is. And what is the symbolism of it? The head of a man and the body of the lion. What is the lion? King. The lion is the king. The lion's share. If there's a kill being made, the lion can bum rush the kill, get his lion's share, and everybody else be chilling. Hyenas, buzzards, even the lioness. When the lion is done, everybody else comes in, gets their piece of the kill. Because he's king. But so what does it say that you put your head on the body of the lion? Is that you, as a human being, stood up to challenge yourself, to create all those disciplines. You're a king. You have the mind. What it deeply says is that your mind, you're on top of the lion because you are suppressing animal nature, the lowest forms. The animals do things out of just a basic instinct of survival. But us as human beings, we can come together and prepare for things to happen for us in the future, not just basically survive. We can come together and prepare to make things happen in a way that animals cannot. So we suppress animal nature, basic instinct nature. We're higher than that. That's what Hori Makat symbolizes. That we, as man, as woman, as human beings, are higher than animal nature. Now, I know sometimes it doesn't seem that way, does it, brothers and sisters? Because we treat each other so dastardly. And no respect. Europeans truly had no respect for people outside of themselves, the other parts of the human family. And the fact that they wanted to take this glory that is ours because they wanted to further put into our minds that we ain't never been nothing but a servant. Organize your data and put it in chronological order. Always use the comedic words whenever possible. Learn some. Look at the golden ages, the peak periods, dynasties 3 through 6. This is the pyramid age. Remember it said the golden ages. Dynasty 3, then dynasties 11 and 12, the imperial age. Dynasties 18 and 20, Queen Hatshepsut. Ramesses, Tutankhamun, Queen Tai, all of these figures. And then Dynasty 25, as Dr. John Henry Clark says, Africa's last great walk in the sun, Dynasty 25. Separate the native people from the foreign people, particularly when the Ptolemies take over, because they were such plagiarizers. They were just putting their face on stuff and so forth. That's when some of the texts, the pyramid texts, some of the reliefs, which are the paintings on the wall, were forged, were messed with, were defaced. So you got to know, understand that. Now, what I would give credit to Cleopatra VII out of the Ptolemies. Now, the argument was she African? Well, what happened with that invasion is there was a lot of quote intermixing when the Ptolemies took over. So she would look like a high yellow sister on the street that you see, brother. Probably look like somebody who could be, even though may be high yellow, but could not be denied that they look African. And that is possible. I bet you she didn't look like Elizabeth Taylor or Claudette Colbert, two Caucasians who played Cleopatra. I think they're supposed to try to put another Cleopatra movie up there, the same old BS with some Caucasian. Now I'm not going to argue whether or not that she was African. You know, that's to me is irrelevant. But let me just say it this way. They embraced African culture. They embraced the comedic culture. And what she wanted to do was to maintain the culture. So that's why she played Julius Caesar. That's why she played Mark Anthony. Because the culture of ancient Kemet was so strong. It did not change all that time. It didn't change even when the Romans came in. It did not change until Islam. So for thousands and thousands of years, Kemetic culture was supreme. Put your information in context. Make sure you understand the historical significance. In that study, remember the cultural continuity of African people, not just in the Nile Valley, but in Africa, period. And now in the diaspora, there is a cultural continuity of African people, which I hope, believe that we can erase these superficial boundaries, all of this trivial stuff, and come together as an African family. In fact, I've stated many times and will continue to do so, that the most powerful thing that we can do at this very moment, the most revolutionary thing we can do, is declare that we are an African people, that we are Africans, that we are African people on the continent and throughout the diaspora, and that we are one. Because if we did that, the next move is to move to create the African reality for us on the continent. We can't do it here, brothers and sisters. I mentioned the Republic of New Africa and then one of those five states, but you cannot be sovereign in a land created by some evil, demonic, selfish, greedy people. You can't. Hell, they can't even do it. Caucasians can't even do it, let alone you talking about doing it. Use multiple studies because other people wrote about Kemet besides Europeans. You know, and you could talk about Basil Davidson. You could talk about a number of people. You know, number of Caucasians. I mean, probably the first one who wrote objectively was Count Vonner. You know, he's quoted in that last piece with Keeley. Count Vonner. And he talks about the Africans and African presence. So, you know, but I don't see the Caucasian collective. There are some individuals, and a lot of times those individuals may have a good voice, but they don't change the dynamic. And there still is European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege prevailing. You can talk about Tim Wise, Elliot, what's the name? Jane Elliott. There's a number of Caucasians. Oh, Basil Davidson. I thought he was objective. There's a number of Caucasians. Hell, even Henry Breasted wrote objectively about the people, but he wanted to create that museum in Chicago. And so he went along with the great white race concept, with Northern Africa being part of the great white race. So that's why ancient Kemet was not African. It was not black. It was white because of the great white race. What if, little quickie, what if there were no African people? A very humorous and revealing story is told about a group of Caucasians who were fed up with American Africans. So they joined together and wished themselves away. They pass through a deep, dark tunnel and emerge in some sort of twilight zone where there is an America without African people. No black people. At first, these Caucasians breathe a sigh of relief. At last, they said, no more crime, drugs, violence, welfare. All of it, they're gone. Then suddenly, reality set in. In the new America, it is not America at all. Only a barren land. There are a few crops that would flourish because the nation was built on a system of servitude, of captivity, of human beings into forced labor, a slave system. So there were no crops. Nothing flourished. Then there were no cities with tall skyscrapers because Alexander Mills an American African, invented the elevator. And without it, one finds great difficulty reaching higher floors. There were a few, if any, cars because Richard Spikes, an American African, invented the automatic gear shift. Joseph Gamble, also an American African, invented the supercharged system for internal combustion engines. And Garrett Morgan invented the traffic light. He also invented the gas mask, which, of course, is very special for me because I'm a firefighter. Furthermore, one could not use the rapid transit system because the electric trolley was also invented by American African Robert Robinson. Even though there were streets and cars and rapid transit systems could operate, they were cluttered with paper because American African Charles Brooks invented the street sweeper. There were a few, if any, newspapers, magazines, and books because John Love invented the pencil sharpener. William Purvis invented fountain pen, and Lee Barge invented the typewriting machine, and W.A. Love invented the advanced printing press. They were all invented by you-know-who, us, as African people. I got some more, but I run out of time. Maybe I'll do it again one day. Brothers and sisters, feel proud of who you are. You come from a great heritage, a great people, a loving, considerate people who have done great things for this world and in this world. We end this program like we end all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. And not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies everything that everybody thinks they want, can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. But it is ours. It is ours. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Do something positive. Shemhotep, go in peace. Asante Sana. Thank you. Peace, family.